transcend time by discussing Krishna. You got that point? Time, as we know it in this world, is limited. Krishna is unlimited. Krishna is beyond time. So we transcend time by discussing Krishna. We enter into spiritual existence. Now we may say, well, we're talking about Krishna, 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 and still the second hands are going. Well, that's analogous to Krishna's existence in this world. He appears to interact with the material atmosphere, but he is always aloof. And his pastimes appear to take place within material time. But the material time that Krishna performs his pastimes in, because of Krishna's presence, everything is converted to spiritual. So if we discuss Krishna, we enter the unlimited, spiritual, transcendental atmosphere. But still, the time will pass. Then we have to go and do other things. But actually, we don't really need to go and do anything else but discuss Krishna. But because we are in limited consciousness, we feel we have to. When we enter unlimited consciousness, like Parikshit Maharaj, he didn't feel any need to eat, sleep, drink, or do anything else but hear about Krishna. Namanya nantasya yashankitani yat shinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava Krishna. Discussion about Krishna should be, who is unlimited, that should be heard, discussed, and accepted. And that is heard, sung, and accepted by persons who are actually saintly. Yesterday evening, I was discussing how Krishna, although he may appear to be sinful, there is no question of his being sinful. So this Vishnu Sahasranama is a discussion of Krishna's good qualities. But Krishna also appears to have bad qualities. But Krishna's bad qualities, or what appear to be bad qualities, are also good qualities. What is bad in you and me, in Krishna, is good. Good means Krishna. What Krishna wants is good. What Krishna doesn't want, that is not good. So if Krishna appears to be doing something wrong, whoever thinks like that, they are wrong. Because Krishna is right, always. There's no question of him being wrong. Otherwise, why should we listen to Bhagavad Gita? Why should we accept it as authoritative? Because Krishna spoke it. What is the reason that we accept Bhagavad Gita? Well, we can accept it because what Krishna says, what is empirically verifiable, makes sense. For instance, Krishna says that the body changes from boyhood to youth to old age. Well, that's a fact. We can accept that. Then it dies. We can accept that. And then the soul within the body gets another body. That we cannot verify. This is all stated in Bhagavad Gita. Dehino smin yatha dehi. That we cannot empirically verify, but it makes sense that the body is changing, but the person remains the same. That means the person is unchanging. So when death is also another change of the body, so we can understand that the person which has remained unchanged throughout all the changes of the body, when this change comes called death, it also doesn't change. So what happens? He gets another body. But much of what Krishna says, we accept because Krishna says it. And that's actually the best evidence. When one Indian doctor, I believe in Sweden, Srila Prabhupada, doubtingly, what is the evidence of the existence of the soul? Srila Prabhupada's reply was that Krishna says so. That is the evidence. That is the best evidence. To which the doctor sarcastically replied, Krishna says so. Yes, sir, Mr. Doctor, you haven't seen the soul. But if you don't believe, you will find out. Because Krishna also comes as death for those who do not want to accept him as life. So, Krishna's apparent bad qualities. We can mention some of them. These are taken actually from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Texts 43 and 44, in which he talks about the enemies. These are the enemies of the conditioned soul. And the translations are, like translations from dissimilar one language to another, in which the languages are dissimilar, they may not exactly convey what the original Sanskrit says. Anyway, these are the qualities of conditioned soul, some of them. Attachment, hostility, greed, lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, pride, disrespect, envy, deception, violence, intolerance, passion, bewilderment, hunger, and sleep. Krishna is supremely liberated. To take shelter of Krishna means to be liberated. He awards liberation. He is mukti-data. That means there's no question of the material bad qualities being present in Krishna. But nevertheless, we see attachment, hostility, greed, lamentation, etc. in Krishna also. So, how can one be benefited by taking a shelter of Krishna if he also has all these bad qualities? Because he doesn't have any bad qualities. The qualities that in the existence of the perverse reflection of this material world are bad, in Krishna they are good, and in his pure devotees they're good. And even the so-called good qualities of this material world, they're also bad, because the substratum of them is envy of Krishna, forgetfulness of Krishna. So Krishna has attachment, and we're very glad that Krishna has attachment, because he's attached to his devotees, and he's attached to all jivas, because they're all intrinsically his devotees. So we're very glad for that. Otherwise we'd just be lost in the material ocean. If Krishna wasn't attached to us, then what meaning would there be to existence? We are trying to revive our dormant love for Krishna. But love is a two-way street. For Krishna, he loves us. He's attached. He's so attached to us, he comes to this material world again and again and again, simply to bring us back to him. And he's so attached to his devotees that he will literally do anything for them. He's got himself an eternal bad reputation by inducing Yudhishthir to lie, by inducing Arjuna to shoot arrows at Bhishma and Drona, by inducing Arjuna to kill Karna in circumstances that were apparently improper, by inducing, similarly by inducing, in a similar situation, to induce Bhima to kill Duryodhana. So Krishna did this because he wants his devotees to overcome. He wants to see his devotees victorious. Krishna could have just made Duryodhana and everyone else just drop dead. He could have gotten them bitten by mosquitoes, like here in Texas now. There's how many cases? 16 cases or so of people dying from some disease transmitted by mosquitoes. So Krishna could have arranged for that, or even not, could have had the whole army wiped out by a flu virus, or just he could have wished them to just all drop dead. But Krishna wanted to give the glory to his devotees. So he may say it was not very glorious to kill in such circumstances, but those who are properly understanding, they glorify Bhima and Arjuna. They do not vilify them. And also, Krishna is demonstrating through all these activities what is the actual principle of dharma. Krishna says, sarvadhaman parityaja, give up all varieties of dharma. And Krishna himself, he also appears to give up all dharma by inducing Yudhishthira to apparently lie and so on. But Krishna says to give up all varieties of dharma, but Krishna himself is beyond all varieties of worldly dharma. So the only dharma that Krishna can be trusted to follow is that of bhaktavatsalya. His undying commitment to protect his devotees. Even if sometimes he appears to do so, again, in very crooked ways. Krishna is crooked. He's tribhanga. Threefold bending form. Bending means crooked. So his character is also crooked. Why is it crooked? Like you see a snake. How a snake crawls. It doesn't go straight. It goes crookedly. That's because what is that? Ahariva gatir prena. That the flow of preem, of love, is crooked. It doesn't go straight. It's not predictable. Even a snake doesn't crawl in a predictable way. There'll be one little loop, and then in the snakes, especially if you see a long snake, then a long, if you take a photo at any moment, you'll find it's like this, and then big one, little one, like this. I guess living in the cities, you don't see snakes unless you go to zoos. But probably if you go out in the country in Texas, you'll see snakes, isn't it? In the desert, there must be, yeah. And in places I've lived most of my life, there are snakes. I say in ISKCON Salem, they're like a regular thing. I think they've, since they've been there, it's about 2 years, they've killed over 30 cobras there. So in Thailand, in Bangkok, there's just snake in the city, there are hundreds of snakes all over. The city floods and you get snakes swimming around in your kitchen and all this kind of thing. So, Krishna's crooked because he's full of love, and love is crooked. It's more fun. If everything's straightforward, stereotyped, where's the fun? Makes life fun. This smartavad is all very straight and ordered, predictable. You have to follow all the rules, and then you end up, when you come to the perfection of smartavad, then you just become desirous to merge into the existence of Brahman, with nothing there. So, love is free. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, in our beginning stage, we also have to follow rules. Because the mind is also free. Raging like the wind. So, we have to follow certain rules. But we worship Krishna, who is beyond all rules, beyond all measurement, beyond time, beyond considerations of piety and sin. No one can, you can't restrict Krishna, but only Krishna is in embrace with Radha. So she is holding him. He is known as Sridhara, which means who is holding Radha, embracing Radha. So she's also Sridhari, because he's also called Sri, and she's holding him. So only she has enough power to hold him. Otherwise, he's completely independent. But he's dependent on his devotees. This contradiction. This modern science, they have so many problems because they can't accommodate contradictions. And they find they've had this problem in quantum theory for almost 100 years now. Is it a wave or is it a particle? They can't work it out. But those who know spiritual science, Vedic science, they know there's no problem. It can be a wave and a particle, even though they have completely contradictory characteristics. You know, well, it can't be. That's because you can't be because your intelligence is restricted, because they're smartavadis, they're Sankhya, mundane Sankhyaites. So they can't understand. But in Krishna, everything is possible. And the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam describes Krishna as Swarat, independent, means ruled by himself only. But later in Bhagavatam, we find Krishna himself saying, Aham bhakta paradhina nahiya swatantra eva dvija. He tells Durvasa Muni, who was another niyamapanti, one who follows the path of the rules. So according to the rules, this Ambarish Maharaj, according to at least Durvasa Muni's interpretation of the rules, this Ambarish Maharaj, he should not have drunk water before Durvasa Muni's return from bathing. So Durvasa Muni was deliberately putting Ambarish into a difficult situation. And when Ambarish found a solution for that, then Durvasa didn't accept that situation. He came in with apparent malice toward Ambarish. He wanted to give him a hard time. But he soon found out that the rules, all the rules in the universe, which he thought he'd conquered, he was a Siddha Yogi. That means the yogis, they can do anything. They can break all the rules of the universe. They can fly in the sky. They can vanish. They can they can enter into an atom. They can do pretty much whatever they like. But the yogi, he found himself in a lot of trouble because he didn't know the underlying rule of the universe. Is that Krishna, who sets all these rules into motion and maintains all the rules, is called dharma. He has one main rule, which is that no one should go against his devotees. And he can break all the rules of the universe to uphold that rule. So Durvasa Muni found out. Contradictory Krishna. So all these bad qualities in Krishna, attachment, he's so attached to his devotees, he'll break all the rules of scripture. Not that he's obliged to follow them, but generally he follows them just for the sake of teaching others, and he doesn't break the rules just to be contrary or just to show how great he is. He doesn't have any need to show how great he is. He doesn't have to impress foolish people. So generally, he generally follows all the rules to set a good example for others, because they can't break the rules without harming themselves. Krishna is not harmed by breaking the rules. He doesn't come under the he doesn't have to accept karmic reactions for what he does. So Krishna can interfere, just like when Arjuna had vowed to kill Jayadratha before sunset. And the sun set. So then Arjuna was finished, because he vowed to either kill Jayadratha or end his life by entering fire. So the Kauravas were very happy that the sun had set. But in the meantime, Krishna made it come up again. Oh, wait a minute, you can't do that. The whole universe would be out of spin. Well, anyway, Krishna did it. Because he can do such things. We can't imagine. You'd have to do a lot of calculations to think. Well, first of all, it's impossible. But then if it did happen, then the whole cosmic situation would be severely upset. But Krishna did it. You don't believe it? Well, you'll find out that what is stated in Shastra is true later on by entering hell for not believing Krishna. So Krishna is attached. The whole material existence goes on because we are attached. We're not attached to Krishna. We have material attachments. The whole path of liberation is to get free from attachment. But Krishna is attached. So yes, we should be detached from everything and fully attached to Krishna. So attachment is very good. Krishna's attachment is very good. And attachment to Krishna by the jiva, that is also very good. Attachment to anything else but Krishna, Krishnetara, that is not good. Hostility, an attitude of hostility. This word hingsa is generally translated as violence, and ahimsa is translated, Mahatma Gandhi translated as non-violence. But more completely, it means an attitude of a hostile attitude. Which can manifest as actual violence. So, Krishna says that he is Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam, the best friend of all living beings. So how can he be hostile to anyone? Well, Krishna is not intrinsically hostile to anyone, but he also says Vinashaya Cha Dushkritam. He comes to destroy the rascals. Hare Krishna. So is he not hostile toward them? Yes, he's hostile. Why is he hostile? Because they're hostile to his devotees. All these apparently bad qualities of Krishna, which are all worshipable when manifest in Krishna, they all spring from his attachment to his devotees. This is Krishna's intrinsic quality. He's extremely attached to his devotees. So hostility, greed in English, that's that may be considered in two main divisions. One is gluttony, and the other is possessiveness, or the desire to possess more and more, more accurately. So Krishna, he's the greatest glutton. He's always eating huge amounts. He expands himself into many forms, and as the deity forms, those who are worshipping the deity, they know they have to feed Krishna again and again and again. When he gets up, even before taking bath, he eats a big feast of sweets. That's not proper. You're supposed to take a bath before you eat anything. But Krishna, even before brushing his teeth, what to speak of bathing, he eats a huge meal of sweets. Actually, it should be a big meal, not a small meal. Lot of sweets. All nice sweets for Krishna, which means someone has to stay up at night cooking them. Nowadays you have the fridge, so you put it in the fridge. Otherwise, better is to get up early in the morning with the... Either way, but Krishna, the first thing he does practically in the day is eat lots of sweets, and then takes big meal, about 3 hours after that. It has a little fruit in between. Fruit and more sweets, just to keep him going. And he goes on and on. And like I say, expands himself into many forms. So, deity worship. Generally we think of deity worship as bathing, dressing, offering arati. But the main activity actually is cooking. Again and again and again, cooking, getting all the nice fruit. Actually, one is supposed to grow the vegetables. That's the best, that's the way it's supposed to be. Grow the vegetables yourself, grow the fruit, grow it for Krishna, and cook it, offer it to Krishna, and Krishna is very satisfied. He's very satisfied, but a couple of hours later, I'm hungry, he needs again. And it goes on and on, and there's no end to it. Because Krishna is endless. So, he requires to be fed again and again and again. That is the archan vidhi, the rule for deity worship. That one has to go on offering again and again. So many nice foods to Krishna. It has to be cooked in ghee, has to be cooked by sinless persons. Devotees, following all the rules. He's very particular, Krishna. He's not only greedy, but he insists it must be of the highest quality. That is only suitable for Krishna. So he eats a lot. He's greedy also, means he wants more and more and more. But what does he want more and more and more? He's already got the whole universe. Everything belongs to him. But he's greedy for his devotees' love. Even though so many devotees love him in the spiritual world, he comes to the material world and tries to wake up those who have forgotten, hey, you should love me also. He's so greedy for love, he doesn't even sleep. At night, he's supposed to sleep, but he jumps out the window and runs off in the forest of Vrindavan and plays with the gopis. When you're very excited about something, you can't sleep. So Krishna's always excited about pastimes with his devotees. So he never sleeps. Actually, he does sleep. That's another bad quality of Krishna's. But he doesn't sleep very much. Because he's so greedy. Lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, pride. Oh, all these qualities in Krishna. Lamentation. Yes, he laments when he's separated from his Radha. He laments that the conditioned souls do not turn. He doesn't only lament, he tries to wake them up. He's very concerned about them. When Shalva, by his mystic potency, created an illusory form of Vasudev, Krishna's father, and brought that before Krishna and beheaded that illusory form. And Krishna lamented. He thought, oh, now my father is killed. So he was in illusion and lamenting. But that this is all Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. It's all spiritual, transcendental bliss. So by the Yoga Maya potency, Krishna may appear to be illusion and lamenting. But even though Krishna, the Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, states that even though in his pastimes Krishna may appear to forget, actually he does forget, that's the whole point, he forgets that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, he never forgets that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, put that in your logic box. How does it fit? Doesn't fit. Doesn't make any sense. He always knows he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he also forgets, simultaneously. Okay, just don't try to understand it, just accept it, that's all. Better. Fear. How can Krishna be afraid when fear personified is afraid of Krishna? But he's also afraid. Sometimes when he hears the thunder claps, he runs to his mother and holds her leg, little Krishna. He's afraid of losing the association again of Radha. How can fear be in Krishna? Well, it is. Again, it's all for his pastime. Not that it's just a show. He actually feels fear. But again, it's not intrinsic fear, because he's beyond all fear. But it is Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitavihi. It is the transformation of transcendental love. Madness, well, definitely plenty of madness in Krishna. It's very dangerous when someone in charge becomes mad, right? If you have a dictator of a country who's mad, it's a very dangerous situation. You just kill anyone left, right, and center. If the president of the United States was to become mad and that wasn't recognized or that wasn't apprehended, he might just start a whole nuclear war. He can do it. He can press the button which sets off the nuclear missiles. It's very dangerous. So Krishna, he's the dictator of everything in existence, but he's also mad. He becomes mad with love. That's the worst kind of madness. You can do anything in love madness. But also, Krishna becomes mad. Vishnu, hardly. Well, they're the same person. Yes, but they're different manifestations of the same person. So while Krishna is mad in love, Vishnu is very calm, looking after the universe. So we can relax and take shelter of Vishnu. Otherwise we can take shelter of Krishna and be mad. So Gauriya Vaishnavas, they choose to be mad. What is the highest attainment in Krishna consciousness? What is your actual goal? The goal is to become mad. That's it. Well, you can do that immediately. Just, take some alcohol. That you can do immediately. Take some. We have better things these days. All kinds of little pills you can take. But no, not that madness. That we're not interested. We only want to be mad in the same way that Krishna is mad. Just as Krishna is mad in love for his devotees, we want, especially the gopis, then especially Radha, so we want to be mad in love for Krishna. But that shouldn't be imitated. To imitate is mundane madness, which is very bad. So Krishna is proud. Krishna's pride. Pride is very bad. Pride kills bhakti. If one thinks, I'm doing so much, I'm so great, I'm big, everyone should bow down to me, everyone should respect me, then we cannot execute bhakti. Krishna is proud, egoistic, he sets up a whole system whereby people have to bow down before him. He says, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskar, you should bow down. He's ordering everyone in the union, bow down. By bowing down, we are lifted up by Krishna. But that is his pride or egoism. That is his mercy. All these bad qualities, apparent bad qualities, they're all exhibitions of Krishna's mercy. So Krishna is proud, but there's no... How do you pronounce that word? Prabhupada used to say inebriety. Inebriety. Dravida Prabhu just told me that. The standard pronunciation. It actually means intoxication. So there's no harmfulness. There's no badness connected with that. The pride of a materially contaminated person is distasteful. But the pride of Krishna is very nice. Yes, Krishna says, I am the greatest. Natah parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananda. No one is equal to me. No one is greater than me. Say, yes, Krishna. So we become Krishna's groupies. Oh, Krishna's fans. Yes, yes. We accept Krishna. You are the proper object of worship because you are actually supreme. So Krishna's pride, it's a great quality. Of course, whatever so-called bad qualities are here, there's also the opposite. Krishna is also very humble. Krishna is a proud, humble person. Well, that we sometimes see in this world. Someone who's proud of being humble. Externally they're humble, but internally they're proud. Everyone should see how humble I am. In devotional service, that's quite possible. Show of humility. But Krishna, he has the most deep humility. Because even though he is by far above everyone else, he subordinates himself to his devotees. And he thinks that whatever qualities I have, it's because of my attachment to my devotees. So intense humility. And at the same time, immense pride and egoism in wanting everyone to bow down to him. Well, this egoism is not misplaced in Krishna because he is actually supreme. He is actually better than others. Whereas among jivas, someone might seem to be better than another. But the Einstein of today is the worm in stool of tomorrow. So it's only a temporary manifestation of strength, intelligence, or beauty, or whatever qualities one may have. Those qualities are borrowed from Krishna. Borrowed in minute quantity. So no one should be proud. Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport, no one should be proud of borrowed plumes. Disrespect. That's not a good quality. One should be respectful, especially of elders. But we find that Krishna, he also, just like the gopis, they sometimes they threaten Krishna. that if you don't behave properly with us, we'll tell your father. And Krishna says, oh, what do I care? He's an old man, he can't do anything to me. Or his father tells him, Krishna asks, why are you performing this sacrifice? You shouldn't perform this. And Nanda says, no, we should. It's a traditional ceremony. We perform this in our family line. We perform this sacrifice. Our people have performed this sacrifice, worshipping Indra since time immemorial. And Krishna should have just accepted. You see, that's his father's telling him. He's citing authorities of all the previous generations, but Krishna doesn't respect his father or the previous generations. He says, no, we're not going to do this. But then that will be disrespectful to Indra. It doesn't matter. Forget Indra. So Krishna is disrespectful. But that, of course, establishes the proper system of respect, that we should be respectful to Govardhan, who is the great devotee of Krishna. Envy, yeah, well, envy, I have to see the Sanskrit, because Srila Prabhupada usually uses the word envy to mean that hostility, which is already done. But envy, the modern English usage of that generally means to think jealousy, that someone is in a malicious way or an unkind way. They don't like that someone has got something more than them. So Krishna appears to be like that also. He's outdone by Radha in beauty, in dancing, in various qualities. So there's rivalry between Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends, and Radha and the gopis. And Radha and the gopis, they almost always win. So, but Krishna doesn't like to accept that because he's envious. He said, no, you cheated, as if he never cheated. That's Krishna. Deception, yeah, the next one, deception. Well, I already spoke a lot about that yesterday. Violence, yeah, Krishna's violence. He kills, talk about mass murderer. Krishna kills every jiva again and again and again. Gives them life again and kills them again and again. He's mass murderer. Forget all these other guys. Charles Manson, he's a nothing. I don't know the latest ones. And now it's become a common thing, right? Mass murders. It's a kid's game nowadays. But Krishna's violent. But that violence, yes. That is very good. Intolerance. Krishna is intolerant. He's intolerant when his devotees are blasphemed. Passion. Oh. Krishna is the most passionate. He's a passionate lover. There are elaborate descriptions of Krishna's passion in loving, which we shouldn't talk among ourselves, because we're still inclined to passionate loving on the bodily, material platform. Bewilderment. Yeah, that's similar to illusion. Illusion is that's like a sthayi bhav. The one's in material existence, illusion is not a sthayi bhav, but it's a sthayi. Well, it is a bhav, but not a transcendental bhav. It's a sthayi stiti. Stiti means that which is sthayi. It's the general condition of everyone in this material world is to be illusioned. And bewilderment means, in this context, we can differentiate bewilderment from illusion by saying that bewilderment means some specific situation which one can't figure out. In general, one is in illusion, thinking that I am this body, these people are my relatives and friends, this is the house that I live in. This is general illusion. And bewilderment means some specific situation where one cannot understand what's going on. So, Krishna is subject to that also, just like, there may be many examples, just one is coming to my mind now. When Krishna saw all his friends entering the mouth of the Aghasura, python, demon, Krishna thought, well, what is this Maya? Who would walk into the mouth of a snake? Or again, that when Shalva brought an illusory Vasudev and chopped off his head, Krishna was bewildered by that temporarily. So Krishna is subject to bewilderment. Hunger. You may say he's very greedy, but he's also very hungry. You don't feed Krishna, he'll be hungry. So you have deities, you have to feed them. You have to remember, he's the hungriest of all. Don't leave them hungry. You have to keep on feeding. And sleep. That's the sthayi bhav around here at the moment. I manage to stay awake in class by giving it. If I'm very tired, I might fall asleep giving it also, but not very often. The Krishna also sleeps. But his sleeping is not like your or my sleeping. While we're sleeping, so we're told from Ayurveda, we understand that various poisons come out of our body from the pores. When Krishna sleeps, universes come out of his pores. So that's the difference between you and me and Krishna. So these are some of the bad qualities of Krishna. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. Let us always glorify and worship Krishna's attachment, hostility, greed, lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, pride, disrespect, envy, deception, violence, intolerance, passion, bewilderment, hunger, sleep, and other millions and millions of bad qualities. So we'll all become very bad people by worshipping Krishna. Just see. You got into a cult. All the time they told you you'd be good by worshipping God, but actually this Krishna is a very bad person. So don't trust him at all. You'll become bad, corrupted by worshipping Krishna. So, that's all that. Any question about this? Thank you for the warning. Okay, well I don't follow it myself, so. All right, a couple of questions here, I guess. So. You have a question?
Yeah.
Question is how to stay awake in class. Go to sleep on time, that could be helpful. Stand up. You don't have these sprays? That's standard used to be standard. I guess nowadays in many temples there aren't enough people in class and you'll be happy to have anyone in the class even if they're asleep. But these flower spray bottles, they're good. Come back to life with a flower spray. Yes?
There's the transcendentally good activities, the transcendentally passionate activities, and so with disrespect, are those transcendentally ignorant activities?
Transcendentally good, transcendentally bad, and transcendentally passionate and transcendentally ignorant. Well, transcendental is all good, even though it may appear to be ignorant or passionate, it's all good. It's not that there are no three modes of material nature in the spiritual world. Passionate, yes, Krishna is passionate. But I'm using that the term passion here in a slightly different sense to the way in which Srila Prabhupada translates Rajaguna as the mode of passion. You can translate that also. Very active, goal-oriented, trying to get some material object like this. So yeah, Krishna's pastimes appear to be very passionate. He builds big cities, like that. He leaves the pastoral scene of the forest of Vrindavan, comes out, you know, uneducated boy, didn't even go, uneducated, comes out of the jungle, just wandering around in the jungle, uneducated, no shoes, and takes some very quick education and self-made, develops a great city, can even speak philosophy. So these are Krishna's establishing Dwaraka might seem to be in the mode of passion, but it's not. So it only has a semblance to the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, but all of Krishna's activities are beyond this. We shouldn't think, when I'm talking about Krishna's bad activities, that should be understood to be figurative, tongue-in-cheek. Because there's nothing, Krishna's stealing is no more bad than his serving his parents. There's no consideration of good or bad in it. It's only from our perspective it may seem like that. But there's no such actual consideration. It's all transcendental bliss. It's all good. Everything that may appear to be good or bad that is done by Krishna is all good. And anything good or bad done in this world without remembrance of Krishna is all bad. Even if it appears to be good. Yes?
Sometimes I see devotees who justify bad qualities in the name of saying it's transcendental.
If someone, yeah, well that's another point to be understood. If someone does bad things and says, well actually it's all transcendental. If a supposed devotee does bad things and says, I'm doing it, bad means not to do it for Krishna. So you may say, well, I robbed the bank for Krishna. Yeah, but who gave you permission to do that? You may have had the idea to do it for Krishna, but even though you may say, well, it's great service, you see, and we got sold all the, paid all the debts and everything, but actually that could be done. We find Tirumangai Alva, he had thieves and all kinds of people, professional thieves, he made them devotees, and then he killed them when there was no more use for them because they couldn't get out of that propensity. So that's Tirumangai Alva. And you are who you are, which is, you're not on that level, so don't imitate. So, if we are to do such unorthodox things, first, we should either actually be situated fully in transcendence, and even then we wouldn't normally do it. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of devotees who don't kill and steal, and there's Tirumangai Alva is unique. If you don't know who it is, well, I'm not going to tell you now because that would be another whole class. If you go in the Sri Vaishnava temples in South India, you have them? Yeah, at Sri Rangam and other places, you'll see one of the Alvas or the great devotees in the Sri Sampradaya prior to Ramanuja. One of them's holding a sword. That's Tirumangai Alva. So, Yeah, don't justify bad activities. And even if we think it's for Krishna, still it has to be approved by devotees. If it's not approved by devotees, then maybe for Krishna, but it won't be pleasing to Krishna. That's why we have gurus. Then.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I wanted to ask about the word envy. I heard that word, like, jealousy was someone has something and you want it also. But envy is like someone has something, you just don't want them to have it, not necessarily that you want it. I was wondering, can we use envy? How can envy be used in Krishna's?
Oh, I never heard that. This definition of envy differentiated from jealousy. Did you all hear that? That jealousy, according to this definition, jealousy means that someone has something and you want to have it. And envy means someone has something and you don't want them to have it.
Not necessarily that you want.
All right. Well, I never heard that definition before. Maybe it is.
And I also heard that
Who did you hear it from? You have to look it up in a dictionary. We're talking about the English language here.
I think it was Bhasin Mahapur. But he was saying that envy couldn't be used in Krishna's words. So I was thinking that envy...
Well, yeah, and you could, and if you give that definition to envy, that someone has something and you don't want them to have it, well, that's malicious. So if you say that can't be used in Krishna's service, well, it could also be that someone's in a high position and you don't want them to have it. So that might appear to be malicious, but it might be for their spiritual uplift. Sometimes devotees also become pleased when someone who's in a high position loses that office because they're misusing it against society in general and maybe against devotees in particular. Anyway, this is all hair splitting. Okay, couple of questions here. In Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text 22, why is it mentioned that ghosts are superior to human beings? The verse says it is because ghosts don't have material gross bodies. Well, that's the reason. That's what the verse says. That's the reason. In that sense, superior. In another sense, maybe inferior also. This, again, we're caught by our linear way of thinking, not multi-pronged, multi-dimensional way of thinking. Recently a discussion took place where one party claimed the sari is not Vedic in the traditional sense, but imported from foreign, what does that say? Moors. That's spelled M-O-R-E-S, and sensibilities. And that traditional dress was likely that of the statues and reliefs found in temples depicting bare-breasted women. The argument is that India is hot and so women wore less clothing as many men of South India do today. I mentioned that the art depicting divine and royal persons was not the standard of society, much like Renaissance and classical art did not always depict the societies that claimed it. The Vedas describe many clothing styles. This sounds like more like an anthropological discussion. I had a long discussion with the devotee who inaugurated this discussion, first of all, years ago. One of the sannyasis in our movement. And after about 1.5 hours, he agreed that, well, if Prabhupada said that the gopis were wearing saris, we can accept it. But he said they might wear something else also. Not blue jeans, that's for sure. Sari is the... He said that sari is not a Sanskrit word, but it's derived from the Sanskrit shatika. So to say it's not, and then there are theories that Sanskrit developed over time, and then you go on and on and go on. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada, his followers, females, during his manifest presence, wore saris. He didn't insist on it, but there was no question of anyone, for instance, going on the altar or cooking in Krishna's kitchen without wearing what we call devotional dress. There's no question of it. During Prabhupada's presence, there's no question of going in the kitchen. You couldn't even walk in with jeans or anything. It had to be devotional dress, what we call devotional dress. So, without getting into that anymore, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.